If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Ah, yes. Hour number two is finally here. And sometimes, you know, we do things on the early line. The early bird gets the worm. In some instances where it may be been around for a certain Giants number that's no longer there because your boy DRS tweeted out a very hot ticket this morning and it should come home to roost in about a year. There's no need to get into the details. Just understand when you watch this show, you get those nuggets of information that you can use to your advantage. Now, in hour number two, let's have some fun with Major League Baseball. Mark, yesterday we did the American League with Joe Ranieri. Had some fun going over each and every division, you know, MVP races, divisional races, who's going to win the World Series. It was a good time. So today, to get us ready for opening day tomorrow afternoon, we're going to hit the National League. So your vibes on this baseball season coming into it, how are you feeling? Are you excited it's here? Is it like, whoa, it starts tomorrow, I can't wait for that? Or, it's baseball, let me worry about college basketball and some other things until it really gets going.
Oh, I can't wait for baseball. I just, much like being a Giants fan right now, being a Yankees fan is equally as miserable. I'm also rooting for a team here for the second time that doesn't really provide me with any direction of how they want to go, what their actual goal is to go out and win a World Series, or, you know, continually to bring back a subpar manager who doesn't understand, you know, how to manage a bullpen or game situation or anything like that. Not only that, that we bring him back, we give him another three-year deal. So, you know, things are looking swimmingly here for the Yankees to continue their drought of World Series until 17 years after it's all said and done. That said, I still am excited for baseball season.
Yeah, the American League certainly up for grabs. And the funny part about that is, yes, with managers, when you're dealing with Boone, it's like, okay, the Yankees are favored to win the AL pennant. And then Boone is like third from the bottom to be like manager of the year in the AL. It's like it should go hand in hand, like a really good manager, really good team, easy to win that. And it's like, well, if the Yankees do win, they actually won in spite of Aaron Boone as their manager at that point, which I do think is fun.
Gerrit Cole and Juan Soto, and you're still the favorite. I mean, that's how the public schmucks are out there. There's no reason to bet the Yankees to win the American League again, period.
The Yankee, set your money on the fire. Yankee tax. Yeah, exactly. The Yankee tax in full effect. And we'll see what they do because, again, opening day starts tomorrow. But if we do focus on the National League, the movers, the shakers, they're all there, which means it's the Los Angeles Dodgers. The favorites right now at the FanDuel Sportsbook to win the National League at a plus 135 price, and nobody else relatively close. The Braves are a really good ball club, plus 550. The Phillies have a really good ball club, plus 600. The Mets spent a lot of money this offseason at a 7-1 price. Let's start with the Dodgers here, Mark. I don't think we have much disagreement, I assume, that the Dodgers should be the front runners here. But do you agree with the price point on the Dodgers at plus 135 and the gap between them and, let's just say, the Braves, Phillies, and Mets?
Do I agree with it? No. Do I understand it? Yes. It's really, really rare to see a team at this stage prices less than a 2-1 favorite to win the National League or to win one of the leagues, period. It's a very, very bad number because so many things can go wrong for a team. They've essentially made it so bettors, there's no reason for them to bet the Dodgers. They're basically saying, hey, you know, we'll take all your money because we'll take the less liability than we will against somebody like the Cubs or the Padres or whoever that might have a shot to win it. So I think when you look at the odds objectively, betting the Dodgers, you're not going to be upset that you have that ticket in your hand, but you're also not sitting there going, well, there's a ton of value I got here. I'm in a good position and can hedge later on. Like, it's a non-hedgeable position later on just because you're not going to get big enough payout in return.
It's true. It's a good betting circumstance. But also, while we talk about the National League itself, you know, jumping in right away, we already saw the Dodgers 2-0 in the season to start. The Cubs are 0-2. Guys, how did that happen? Yeah, well, Major League Baseball opens their season a few weeks before the actual open of the regular season. It just happens that way. And I don't think anybody really watched the Dodgers win two games like, oh, that's it. Nobody else can beat them because the Cubs can't beat them overseas in Japan. So that's not the case. But if we do focus on the teams behind the Dodgers, the Braves, the Phillies, and the Mets, we'll start there because they're the three teams that are still under a 10-1 price. If we look at those three teams in order, the same thing I asked you with the Dodgers, Mark, do you agree that it should be the Braves favorite over the Phillies and the Mets?
The Braves are a team that has a ton of what ifs, right? I always talk about what ifs when it comes to the baseball season. What if Spencer Strider returns to form? What if Ronald Acuna can stay healthy for their entire year? What if Ozzie Albies can stay healthy? What if Matt Olson returns to the form 2 years ago when he hit 50 bombs? There's a lot of what ifs. What if Spencer Schwellenbach was better last year than he better this year than he was last year, right? A ton of what ifs. And when you have a lot of what ifs, it's really hard to make all of them go into your favor. A lot of those what ifs are going to go, nope, it didn't go the way we wanted it to. And that leads me to believe that there is pause to take the Braves to be able to beat a team like the Dodgers. Again, I would think that the Braves, given their pedigree and what they have, you know, the favor that they've won with the betting public over the past couple of years, is justified making them the second favorite. But would anybody be surprised if the Braves didn't win the division? They didn't win it last year. So for me, again, you know, I look at the Mets. As much as it may pain me as a Yankees fan to say it, they don't have to win the division. All they got to do is get to the playoffs, and that Soto guy has proven he can carry anybody, anywhere throughout the postseason. I mean, that's a good way to look at the Mets and go, there's value there at 7-1.
Yeah, no, there is. So if we look at, let's just say, the Dodgers being the clear lead dogs here, and they don't have any weaknesses. An unbelievable bullpen, a ridiculous embarrassment of riches there for the starting five and their pitching staff. And then that lineup there that can say, yeah, you know what? Opening weekend, we don't need Freddie Freeman. We don't need Mookie Betts. We'll still be able to put teams away, like two of the better players in baseball itself. So if we are lining them up, right, the Braves, the Phillies, and the Mets. So you say the Mets would have the best chance to take down the Dodgers as opposed to the Braves and the Phillies?
Again, I have ultimate, after what I watched with Juan Soto last year, and this may be, you know, hard for people to comprehend, but you literally watched a guy carry an entire team with clutch hit after clutch hit and big spot after big spot. Not only hits, home runs, Donnie. I mean,
yeah,
you know, you can't put a price on that in the postseason. And not only that, I remember last year what Pete Alonso did for the Mets to save their season. Right, hit that game or that go ahead. Was it game tying or go ahead home run against the Brewers? Against one of the best closers in all of baseball. So they have enough power in the lineup to go bat for bat, swing for swing with the Dodgers. Will their pitching hold up? That's a real good question. I don't know the answer to that yet. But if you get to the postseason, and that's the thing. The Mets have enough to mash their way through 162 to make the playoffs. I have no idea what their postseason rotation is going to look like 7 months from now. So it's hard for me to sit here and say, are they going to be good enough? I'll have a better idea of that in September if they're going to be good enough, but I know their lineup, if they stay healthy, should be.
Cubs sit there at a 12-1 price. Their season apparently already over because they lost two games to the Dodgers. No way they can make up two games in the NL Central here at a 12-1. Padres, Diamondbacks, Brewers, Reds. Any other team, Mark, because we're going to go team by team just a little bit with the divisions, that just catches your eye in the National League that you think maybe they can catch some lightning in a bottle, really do some damage and be a challenger in the NL?
I mean, do we say the Pirates with Paul Skeens? Is he enough to put them over the top?
Mm.
Like, if Paul Skeens and the Pirates, and oh, by the way, the NL Central is wide open. Like, I have no idea who's going to win the division. You know, I really, really don't. The Cardinals will come back down. The Cubs are better. I don't know if they are. I think the Brewers will come back to earth. Could the Reds' offense finally wake up and carry them? I don't know. But let's just say in a world where the Pirates find enough offense and, you know, can sneak into a wild card game, right? Or a wild card series.
Mm-hmm.
You get Paul Skeens to pitch the first game of the wild card series. And let's say, you know, they sweep them. And all of a sudden now you're going up against the Dodgers in the wild card round, and Skeens can make two starts. Does that keep them alive? Is he good enough to shut down a Dodgers? I think so.
Yeah, that's where the problem comes in, really. Yep. Playoff baseball usually is that Achilles, where that hot team that gets hot at the end of the season can knock somebody off. Your pitchers also have a lot of wear and tear on that arm in the regular season. How healthy are they coming in to the playoffs themselves? That was the Dodgers' downfall last year. If there was one and still able to win a World Series, was how many injuries they had. Oh, don't get me started on the Dodgers. We're going to keep it moving here. The NL East on deck right here for hour number two.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Division by division, we go on the early line for this Wednesday morning in anticipation of opening day starting on a Thursday, which is tomorrow. The focus of this segment is going to be the NL East, which includes the Braves, the Phillies, the Mets, the Nationals, and the Marlins. If we look at the FanDuel Sportsbook right now with odds to win that division, it's the Atlanta Braves at a +125 number, followed by the Phillies at a +195 number, and then we get down to the Mets at +220, the Nats at 80-1, and then the Marlins, I always like these, not to win the World Series, to win their own division, 360-1. So just like we started to talk about the NL standings for overall winning the pennant, does Mark agree that the Atlanta Braves at a +125 price should be the favorite right now in the NL East at the FanDuel Sportsbook?
That is a price because of the pedigree. Again, what they have done in the past has curried enough favor with odds makers to turn around and go, this is the favorite to win this division. Are they the best team in the division? I don't know. I think there's a toss-up between all three of them that could tell you that they're the best team in the division. Yeah, that's why the odds are all within a dollar of each other, right? I mean, because it's really, really close. So this is one of those things where it's like, hey, if you're going to try and bet, you know, one of these teams to win the division, good luck. It doesn't provide you with a lot of value or a position that's going to be favorable down the road. I would look to the win totals more than anything and say, hey, if you believe in the team, believe me to go over their win total, because guess what? You can hit that bet and they don't have to win the division. The Mets could still win 91 games and not win the division. The Braves could win 94 games and not win the division, right? Like, you're probably going to get better odds off the win total numbers than you would anything else, as far as, you know, a way to make a wager on which team, which of those three teams is going to win this thing. I just would look to an alternate market because I think it's very, very close.
I'll tell you what the interesting part about the Braves and betting the Braves would be is they're the favorites at +125. But for me, I say to myself, all right, let me look at that lineup, which is a very quality lineup. But the guy that's probably, of course, not going to be their opening day due to knee injury is Ronald Acuna Jr. But the expectations will be back, let's just say, late May, early June in that aspect. And the same thing as we take a look at Spencer Strider working his way back from an elbow injury. He will be back at some time this season. Is this one of those where you say, you know what, I don't want to bet the Braves per se in April or May, where maybe they're a better baseball team? Because I always say they're the best front office in baseball with the moves that they make, particularly at the trade deadline. And some of those, like, ooh, that's an interesting move, like bring over Jerks and Profar to add to that lineup. I look for the Braves to be a better second half team than I do first half. So if I'm betting the Braves, I might want to sit out April and May and wait till they get that full staff there. And maybe that price at 125 is now 150 or a 2-1 price to get a better number. Any thoughts on the Braves from the beginning of the season to what the anticipation for you, Mark, will be at the end of the season?
Love the angle. Love the thought process. Totally concur. I'll give you one old adage that people have said for years about Major League Baseball. You can't win the pennant in April and May, but you certainly can lose it. You certainly can lose it. You can dig yourself a big enough hole that you can't get out of when it comes down to it, because, you know, playing 600 baseball for 4 months is really, really tough. If you only play 540 baseball, which is really tough and very good over the course of the last 4 months, if you dig yourself a big enough hole, it might not be enough to get out of it. So that's the real challenge here. I think your logic is spot on. I think it's a real smart move. And maybe if you find an in-season win total for the Braves where it drops low enough after the first month of baseball, if they get off to a below-average start, that you believe they can come back and do it. But yeah, I think the logic is sound with what you're approaching it with. You just got to be very, very careful. If it gets off to a bad start, a very bad start, they might not be able to recover.
Yeah, take a look at the Phillies at that plus 195 price. Superstars all up and down that lineup. Again, going to probably roll with the majority of the players they had last year. Kyle Schwarber probably still going to start in that leadoff spot. Trey Turner, Bryce Harper, Alec Bohm, Max Kepler, a new addition into the lineup there to add some pop in that small ballpark. But the Phillies pitching staff, which is really what they're built on here. Ranger Suarez, however, going to start the season on the IL. Last year, first 2 months of the season, he might have been the best pitcher in baseball. Still gives you Zach Wheeler, Jesus Luzardo, Aaron Nola, Christopher Sanchez, and then fade away Taijuan Walker, who was terrible last year. They tried to get him out of the rotation, but he makes too much money. Wasn't supposed to be in the rotation. Now steps back into the Ranger Suarez injury, and like his last two Major League Baseball starts in spring training, got lit up like a balloon there. That's a worrisome part. But for the Phillies themselves, World Series, down to NLCS, down to the divisional round. It's almost like going backwards where it's like, okay, this year they don't make the playoffs. I have good high expectations for the Phillies. But again, the Dodgers still lined up in the NL. The Braves are going to be tough and the Mets got better. Your thoughts here on the Philadelphia Phillies entering into 2025, Mark?
Yeah, I don't want to let your Philadelphia fandom get in the way here, but it does look like it's going to be tougher for them without the pitching to compete. And that's ultimately what this team really needs. And for years, their bullpen has been their Achilles heel. And I don't know that the bullpen has gotten any better. I mean, actually adding Jesus Luzardo is a big plus for the Phillies. I think that's going to be a real big part of their rotation. But in reality, too, did you really believe Ranger Suarez is going to hit this year again after what he did last year? Because last year was the outlier for him. If he does, great. But that's one of those what-ifs I talked about with the Braves. Like, what if Ranger Suarez is able to do the same thing this year in 2025 as he did in 2024? I don't know if that same guy shows back up because he was never that guy before. So I think that's a big part of it, but their bullpen and their bats really, you know, have to be above average for them to make a deep run into the postseason.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to watch it play out because, again, a high-priced veteran lineup where the organization is telling, like, we paid you a lot of money, now it's time for you to perform. And last year, you're getting a lot of breaks with the Atlanta Braves and also the New York Mets, who actually beat them in the playoffs. But during the regular season, the Phillies were far and away the best team in the division and ended up winning that. I don't know if that's going to be the case because why? Teams like the New York Mets certainly improved with Juan Soto, Lindor, Soto, Alonso, Nimmo, Vientos, Winker, Siri, Beatty, and Torrens expected to be in that starting lineup and a decent pitching staff. The Mets outcome. Is it too much too soon with Juan Soto, or do the expectations be we better win this division? As an owner, I paid a lot of money for this team.
Yeah, I think that's a big part of it. You know, like when you put that kind of money out there, you need the investment to be returned. But I mean, is there really any concern that they're not going to win the division? I mean, come on, it's a fait accompli at this point.
The New York Metropolitans out here. Let's see what happens in the NL because it's going to be a fun division all the way through. A lot of competitive teams. Two teams that won't compete, probably the Nationals looking towards the future. And then, of course, the Miami Marlins at this point. But the next division we're going to bring up, is it already over by opening day? Because one team is 2-0 and nobody's going to be able to chase them down. That's the NLCS. That's the Dodgers we're talking about. There are some talented teams in the division. Can they compete? We'll find out.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Ah, yes, the best team that money can buy. It's your Los Angeles Dodgers. It's time to talk a little baseball about the NL West, which includes the Dodgers, the Padres, the Diamondbacks, the Giants, and the Rockies. If we look at the price points here to win this division, the updated numbers, the Dodgers actually had a minus 750 price, so a buyback on another team in that division where they were sitting at minus 800? Unbelievable. The Padres at an 11-1 price, the Diamondbacks at a 12-1 price updated, and the Giants at 38-1, and the Rockies at 500-1 to win that division. So once again, we'll start with the Los Angeles Dodgers. A minus 750 price currently at the FanDuel Sportsbook, an outrageous price, but sometimes value is in the eye of the beholder. Is anybody picking anybody outside the Dodgers to win the NL West, Mark? Could that be the case?
I mean, again, I still think the Padres are very good. You know, obviously Joe Musgrove won't be back until later on in the year. But when you talk about a starting staff of Dylan Cease, Michael King, Yu Darvish, who is injured, still have Michael Waldron, the knuckleballer, they have as good as any of a starting staff as anybody in baseball. It's a pretty good big four that they have going out there. They have a lineup that can still hit the baseball. They were really good last year, even without a year after losing Juan Soto. It's the only team I'd really give a shot to. I know the D-backs certainly have the World Series pedigree from a couple of years ago, but I don't know. I look to the Padres and I look at their win total and I go, that feels really low for a team that won 93, 94 games last year. Like the idea that they're going to dip that far back to me, the Dodgers winning 100 games doesn't preclude the Padres from winning 90. They still get to play the Rockies 13 times. They still get to play the Giants 13 times. There's a whole bunch of below average NL Central teams running around. And they still have the Nats and the Marlins. Like, you know, like there's still a chance that they could win a lot of games and make the postseason and possibly try to pull off an upset.
They got a lot of bounce that lineup, too. It was always a great move to get Louis Arraez in that leadoff hole, constantly hitting over 300, a hit machine, setting the table for Tatis Jr., Jackson Merrill, Manny Machado, Jake Cronenworth, and Xander Bogaerts. It's a fun team at this point, but it's almost like a couple years ago where the Padres never were that team that spent all that much money. Their late owner was like, you know what, let's make a playoff push, let's spend some money and put it out there. And it was a great move, and it brought baseball back to San Diego and superstars in the town on a beautiful ballpark with great weather. And then the Dodgers just go, we'll just up the ante and buy everybody. It doesn't matter who you pay. It doesn't matter because we'll pay more for better players at this point. But I do like what you see, like Michael King and Dylan Cease in that starting lineup there for the pitching staff. And you're right about it. Just because the good part about it is like old school baseball, where you have to win your division, otherwise you don't make the playoffs. That's why the wild card was added. Otherwise, like Major League Baseball would have a real petition with the NOS going like, why are we playing this season if there's no chance for any of us to make the playoffs and spending a couple $100 million on our payroll? So at least credit that with baseball got it right, where anything can happen in the playoffs. And typically that has happened over the past couple years. With the Padres at 11-1, the Diamondbacks at 12-1. I do think the Padres are the best team to challenge the Los Angeles Dodgers if anybody can actually do that. The Arizona Diamondbacks, you take a look at their roster, Carroll, Marte, Gurriel Jr., Naylor, Suarez. I like the way this lineup sets up. Maybe a little bit underwhelming with the pitching staff, but Zach Gallen, one of the better young pitchers in Major League Baseball, if we could still call him young at this point. I do like that team, but I do give the Padres the nod over the Diamondbacks in this division, the way they'll place here.
Yeah, again, the D-backs, I think that's a lineup that you should be scared of. Right from top to bottom, there's a lot of reasons to believe that Arizona is still going to be able to hit the ball, especially at home where they've done pretty well the last couple of years. What do you get after Zach Gallen, right? How much do you get after him in the rotation that you truly believe is something that is credible that's going to be able to carry you? I don't know the answer to that question. They seem to be competitive and have the last 2 years. Is it enough this year? Look, I think a lot of these numbers, especially in the NL West, have changed because of the perception of the Dodgers. But again, the Dodgers winning 105, 106 games does not change the projections for anybody else. I mean, in reality, 4 or 5 more wins for the Dodgers, does it mean 4 or 5 more wins for one team directly, 4 or 5 more losses, rather, for one team directly? No, it could be spread out across 3 or 4 teams. So I think we've move some of these numbers in a direction. Again, you're sitting there looking at almost a 20-win gap between first and second place in that division. That's really odd, Donnie. Like that's a very much an outlier set of comparison.
It really is. And you have two teams in that division, too. Like the San Francisco Giants for the past couple of years are just trying to give money away. And people are like, hey, you know what? I'll stay away from that organization for some reason or another. And then you take a look at the Colorado Rockies, which I do want to start here with a couple comments on the Rockies in the next segment before we segue into the NL Central. It's baseball. It's hour number 2. It's opening day tomorrow. Are you ready? We're trying to get you there on the early line.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
We're going to get to the NL Central in just a bit. It's like the forgotten franchises typically, right? The AL Central, the NL Central, not really factoring in at this point. But I do want to put one marker here on the Colorado Rockies. It's a large city. They do support their team. They come to the ballpark here. You know, hey, it's a nice day in Denver. The ball's going to travel. Enjoy yourself. But the players apparently don't enjoy going there or even want to play there. They're a 500-1 price to take out the Los Angeles Dodgers as the division favorite and the champion. We know that's not going to happen. But did baseball make a mistake, Mark? by putting a team in Denver, Colorado at that elevation to really change the game where I see it around the humidors come in there. It really doesn't help all that much. Now other teams are having the humidor in. Is it just a fail for baseball to say it just doesn't work here? It's carnival baseball, and it's now apparent where the organization is like, well, we're just going to make some money and never be competitive again. It's just the way it is.
Well, look, this is a team that made it to a World Series, right? I mean, which is more than you could say for a lot of teams as of late. Hell, I think the Rockies had made a World Series more recently than the Yankees did prior to last year.
07? Goodness.
Yeah, if I recall correctly. So anyway, my point is that like it can have success. You just have to have the right ownership group and the right, you know, baseball people to be able to do it. You know, you need a bunch of sinker ball pitchers. You need a bunch of guys who keep the ball in the ballpark. You need a bunch of guys who get, or high strikeout rate guys and low or high whiff rate guys that don't allow other guys to put the bat on the baseball. That's what you have to construct your team. You have to make Coors Field an advantage for you and not for them. And that's, it's difficult to do. It's not impossible. I don't think baseball in Denver is a bad thing. I don't think it's a fail for the sport. I think when you have failing ownership groups and ownership that does not prioritize winning more than anything else, then guess what? And you're seeing a paradigm shift of what we've seen, and you and I are about the same age, what we've seen 20 to 25 years ago. Owners 20 to 25 years ago were singular individuals who would have slit their own wrists in the middle of traffic to win baseball games and win a World Series. You don't see that level of commitment anymore. You don't see that level of want to. It is out there publicly. It's what they say. But at the end of the sheet, there's a bunch of bean. At the end of the day, there's a bunch of bean counters looking at a balance sheet, trying to figure out what's the way we can turn this business into something that's profitable. I've said it repeatedly about the Yankees over the last 5 to 7 years. They are a great business. They are great at the business of baseball. They're not good at baseball because they don't play, they don't construct their team like they want to win baseball games and win a championship. They like to print money. They like to churn out profit. They're really good at that. But winning is secondary to the balance sheet and the income statement. And that's sadly where we are with a lot of owners in sports nowadays.
You're right. And it's the perfect time to talk about the NL Central, because if you look at this division from top to bottom, it's a lot different than many other divisions because you have a major city included in the Central, which is Chicago, which means they have Wrigley Field. They're sold out every single night, huge television market deal in a big city. But they operate like, you know what? If we can just stay ahead of the Brewers, Reds, Pirates, and Cardinals, who aren't going to spend as much as us, we will be so profitable, which is not the way you're supposed to operate. Like if the Dodgers said, hey, you know, we play in a division with San Francisco. It's a big market, and Phoenix is a big market here. Let's just say slightly ahead of it, we'll be really profitable. The Dodgers go, our goal is to win championships, and the money doesn't matter because our ownership group has so much money. We're in this just to win, and that's the way it's supposed to be. Is it a business? Absolutely. Do you want to lose money? Absolutely not. By the way, it's almost impossible to lose money with a Major League Baseball team or an NFL team or an NBA team. But the Cubs come in as a plus 115 price, but I look at their roster and say, they should be superstars at every single position, and they don't get that. Hap, Suzuki, Tucker, Bush, Swanson, Horner, decent starting lineup here. I think they're the best team in the division, but again, as you said, if they really wanted to lay the hammer down, they could roll over everybody with their payroll in this division, and they don't do it, but they're still the favorites. Do you agree that the Cubs should be the favorite here at the FanDuel Sportsbook at a plus 115 price in the NL Central?
Sure, but to your point, again, the Cubs are the one team in Major League Baseball in the one division, as you said, is the only major market out there that has the fortunate luxury of spending down to their competition, whereas everybody else has to spend up to their competition. They go, all we got to do is clear a very low bar, right? They are looking for a six when the lights go up at the club. They don't need to find an eight or a nine. All they need to do is get a six because they're in a division full of fives and fours, and that's really what it boils down to. So, you know, the Cubs don't have to spend and overspend to be able to outpace the competition within the NL Central. And again, if you look at it objectively, hey, if we win our division and we go to the playoffs every year, we will continue to print money hand over fist, and that's enough. Are our fans going to be upset that we haven't won? We did finally break that World Series streak thing. So again, we waited 108 years. What's another 10 or 20 for the next one? So, yeah. They're in a very fortunate position.
Yes, they certainly are at this point. And one of those teams that has been frugal but has been a very good baseball team over the past couple of years has been the Milwaukee Brewers. They're at a plus 260 price to win this division. But as we said, operating as a large market, they don't do that. They had one of the best bullpens in baseball. When you take a look at Josh Hader, he's not going to go there because they didn't want to pay him. Devin Williams, he winds up in the Big Apple. Why? Because they couldn't pay him either. So now you're saying, all right, let's sort of rebuild that bullpen. It's a nice lineup. And last year, Christian Yelich only had 315 at-bats when most Major League Baseball players getting 600 to 700 bats due to injury. He wasn't there. I like that lineup, but a lot of question marks around the pitchers and also the bullpens. Any thoughts here for the second place team, at least in the odds market, at a plus 260 price with the Brewers?
I think they're primed to take a step back. I mean, this is where, again, I feel like the Pirates to make the playoffs or the Reds to make the playoffs would be an appetizing bet. When you talk about probably getting in the 2-to-1 to 3-to-1 range, because if the Brewers take a step back, because they're in the division, and that's the thing we talked about kind of with the NL West, because the Dodgers are going to win five more games, it doesn't mean that it's all going to be against the Padres or the D-backs. I would contend it's a little bit different in that division because the Brewers take a step back. Who's going to take advantage? It's the teams within their division because they're all so closely lumped together, right? That they're going to have more opportunities to do so because they're playing all those guys 13 times. So, yeah, I kind of feel like the Brewers take a step back, and then the Pirates and the Reds are the beneficiary of that.
Yeah, it should be. It's a fun division overall because there's a lot of teams like up in the air. And the same thing we talked about yesterday in the AL Central. A lot of teams lumped up together with price points because the Cubs are plus 115 price, plus 260 on the Brewers, plus 460 on the Reds, 850 on the Pirates, and then a 9-to-1 price on the Cardinals. Used to really rule that division. Who knows where they're getting out of their own way at this point. But if we do focus on teams like the Reds and the Pirates, they are fun teams to watch. I know you brought up, like with Paul Skeens, if there's any chance that this team can make a run and get into the playoffs and Skeens is healthy, you can almost bookmark like game number one of that series he pitches. There might be the favorite in that game, regardless of who's pitching against him, because how dominant he probably was this season and could be a Cy Young pitcher. You look at their pitching staff. Now, there is a lot to be desired because, again, the payroll is much lower in Pittsburgh. You have Skeens, Keller, Heaney, Falter, and Molodsky in that lineup, and a decent hitting lineup with Brian Reynolds, one of my favorite young players in Major League Baseball. But outside of that, not a lot to love for the Pirates. But then again, it's still a winnable division for them.
Yes, it is. And again, what is their lineup really? And how much can they produce runs is going to be the ultimate answer for the Pirates if they can actually make a push at this thing. I think they've got the pitching. Obviously, Skeens is the anchor. But, you know, when you look at everything else about this team, if they can score more runs, if they can find a way to be a little bit more offensive and put runs up, they could be a team that sneaks in.
Yeah, we're taking a look here, too, at St. Louis as I bring up the rosters at this point. Once used to be baseball heaven with endless prospects, maybe that's run out. Like in this division, again, with not a lot of spending, they're at a 9-to-1 price now to win that division, which is kind of insane. Nupar, Contreras, Donovan, Arenado, they're trying to give Arenado away. No takers whatsoever, probably paying half of the salary and still couldn't get it out there. You take a look at the pitching staff, Sonny Gray, who I do like there, Eric Fetty, Palante, Michaelis, who really dropped off in Liberatore. Not a lot of good vibes, but my goodness, how far have the St. Louis Cardinals fallen off, Mark, to be last in the divisional odds here at the FanDuel Sportsbook? Ouch.
Yeah, it says a lot about them from a team that, you know, was very competitive years ago. That, and they lose Goldschmidt now, too. Like, I offensively, I think they're going to struggle. They struggled last year. It could be even worse.
Not even Goldschmidt on that team anymore. Say it ain't so. MVP awards in the National League. Is it Ohtani or is it next?
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
MVP. MVP. The one thing we know in the National League is there's a lot of good baseball players. Same thing in the American League. But the one thing we do know is the Dodgers are the prohibitive favorite to win the National League and the World Series. So it'll be no surprise that the best player from the best team would again be in that MVP race. We take a look at the FanDuel Sportsbook as it sits right now. The odds, Shohei Ohtani, plus 145 to win the MVP, followed by Juan Soto at a plus 550 price. Tatis, Betts, Harper, Tucker, Ellie De La Cruz after that. So let's start once again at the top of the heap. The MVP, does it start and end for you, Mark, with Shohei Ohtani?
Not from a betting perspective. When you look at kind of, again, is there a ton of value there? No. I mean, you may want to wait to see if Ohtani dips and gets to a 3-1 number or a 4-1 number at some point in the season for whatever reason, and then charges back and wins the thing. I already placed a future on Juan Soto to win the NL MVP. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, he'd have won the AL MVP last year if the guy Judge wasn't batting in front of him. So, you know, he's only got to compete with really Ohtani. And, you know, the other thing I would look at, and I don't want to get to it, but Pete Alonso to get back on track with the protection from Juan Soto in the lineup. You saw what it did for Judge last year. It may do the same thing for Pete Alonso this year. If you want to look at his home run prop or anything else, I don't know if he'll have an MVP caliber year, but nonetheless, I have enough faith in Juan Soto to be able to change this market pretty quickly. And over the course of the season, I think you'll see those two. It should be a two-horse race between those two.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see because Ohtani is so darn good. He's on a baseball team. He's going to get a lot of at-bats and lead him up the top of that lineup. But as we focus on some other players there, because Juan Soto does have a high impact, but he's also going to set the table a lot for the guys behind him. As you pointed out, he's going to take walks. He's going to force you to pitch to him. You're going to get a better look at strikes here, whether you're batting in front or behind Juan Soto. Fernando Tatis at a plus 850 price for the San Diego Padres. Mookie Betts also. I don't know if he's going to start the season on the IL, having a problem with a little bit of stomach bug, lost about 15 pounds, missed that series with Japan. We'll see how that plays out. Bryce Harper always in that connection here at a 14-1 price, playing in that smaller ballpark, being the best player in that lineup. Does anybody stick out? Like, of course, there's the Ohtanis and the Bryce Harpers, but around the like 20-1 or higher that you might think catches lightning in a bottle this year and can have an MVP season.
I mean, if Ronald Acuna puts together another 40-40 campaign, he's going to be in the conversation, right? Like, that's what it boils down to. How quick does he get back? What sort of numbers does he have? How much can he produce an impact? You know, again, a 40-70 campaign wasn't enough for him to win an MVP, but I don't know if you could slide that past people twice to be the only guy to have two 40-40 seasons. If he does that, he's going to be in the conversation. I think it's worth, you know, a pizza bet on Ronald Acuna Jr. to win the MVP.
Yeah, it should be interesting to see how he comes back and also does he get that benefit? Because last year we're talking about, like, Paul Skenes didn't appear in April. He was a later in the season and almost had to thread that needles to be dominant all the way through, which he was really closing the gap on that Cy Young market, which we'll get to in just a few moments. Now, if I bring up some guys down the list, and the reason why I brought Paul Skenes up is we are expecting dominance out of him. I don't think anybody's saying, like, sophomore slump, they'll get around to him, they'll figure him out. His stuff is electric. He throws hard. He's a power pitcher. He's at a 75-1 price right now to win the MVP in the National League. So without going into specifics there on that, do you believe there's a chance that a guy like Paul Skenes, who is a pitcher, can win the MVP? Or is it just too tough of a hurdle to climb for a pitcher where they go, the Cy Young is your MVP. You can't win MVP. Is that a worthy investment for Skenes?
No, because MVP voters have become idiots over the course of the last 10, 15 years. They really have, across all sports. And it started really with the NBA more than anything when we got to this whole,
well, he already won one, so I can't give him another one.
Kind of mentality, which is stupid. And then the same thing happened in the NFL.
Well, he can't be the MVP because he's not a quarterback. We'll just give him Offensive Player of the Year.
Like, it's just flawed, awful logic. Hi, how about he can win a 4-straight MVP? Hi, how about he can be the Offensive Player of the Year and the MVP? Like, those things are totally okay. If the numbers warrant and the guy deserves it, do it. But again, that's how voters have turned. Well, I got one million. I'm voting for Cy Young. I don't need to vote him for MVP. Well, that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard of. If his numbers warrant it, then vote for both. It's okay. But that's not the way voters do things anymore. So, yeah, I think it'd be wasted money.
You take a look there, yes, and sometimes you have to deal with that human element of things, the way they, you know, take a look at it. Same thing with the MOP we'll talk about in the NCAA tournament. Like, he was the best player. Wait a second. Did you have that just on the final two games in the Final Four? Or did you take that into account his entire season? It's just a culmination. You're not supposed to do that, but we as humans do that sometimes. Two players I want to take a look at because the MVP markets are interesting to me. You have to do something special, which is usually the home run market. You have to do something crazy, like try to hit 350-plus in a regular season, or let's just say an exorbitant amount of hits that can sort of factor it in. So you look at Shohei Ohtani. He can do all that stuff. Hit for average, hit for power, RBI, you get it. Pete Alonso, listed at a 55-1 price, I think is interesting because some of the elements that we talk about, Mark, where Soto's going to protect you, men on base, they can't pitch around you, and the ability to connect, let's just say 50 home runs. A little bit tougher to do that in Citi Field. So I even go a couple steps lower. Kyle Schwarber is 150-1 to win the MVP. The one thing that that guy has is a bat. And if he's a leadoff hitter in that small ballpark in Philadelphia, if he has a chance, which he does, to hit 45-plus home runs, a plus-150 price is interesting to me. Guys that can hit the home run always get extra weight here. And Schwarber, 150-1 is an interesting number there for me, Mark.
Yeah, I get it. I understand your hesitation about anything related to the Mets with Citi Field, because it's just a cavernous canyon where not a lot of guys hit the ball out of the ballpark. The Mets wanted it that way because they were typically built on pitching, and now they have a lineup that's supposed to mash the baseball from top to bottom. So I certainly understand your hesitation there. But again, Schwarber, here's the problem again. The analytics nerds.
Well, he strikes out way too much.
I mean, you know, we can't give him the MVP. We can't give him because analytics tell us guys who strike out are bad. Hit 55 home runs, but you know, let's focus on your 200 strikeouts. I don't know what matters anymore to people, but I would tell you that, you know, again, the cards are stacked against a guy like Schwarber.
Yeah, I'm interested to see, like, if we can get a surprise this year. Like, the expectations are the guys at the top of the heap, the Harpers, the Otanis, the Sotos, the Tees. I wonder if somebody can really get out in that first quarter bubble, right? Have an unbelievable April and say, this, because we always see those high flyers there early in the season, and I know we're going to see that again. I just wonder who that guy is actually going to be. More with the awards market coming up next. We'll take a look at some Cy Young action, Rookie of the Year, Manager, Reliever, Comeback Player of the Year. Is that number already wrapped up with that player? Find out who that player is next in the early line.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
The awards market in the National League. Otani, did he already wrap up the MVP after hitting one home run in the first two games of the year? Oh, he's a runaway victory. Nobody's going to catch the Dodgers as they already have two victories. We take a look at the NL Cy Young market, and it is a fascinating one because people were buying in Skeens early last year when he debuted, and that number got all the way down to, what, plus 250 at that point at the end of the season before eventually giving way to Chris Sale. You take a look at this year, Zach Wheeler at a 6-1 price. Skeens the favorite at a 2-1 price. Snell 10-1, Burns 15-1, Sale 18-1 at this point. Is it Skeens to lose, Mark, in this marketplace?
Yeah, right now it is. Barring a injury or something of a horrific start in April, I don't know how it's not going to be him. I mean, what's the reason to believe that he's going to fall off a cliff? I don't know that we have any verifiable data that will tell us that. And then again, I don't know if we have any verifiable data that won't tell us that. So it's just too early of a sample size for him to know. But by all accounts, we know Paul Skeens to be the real deal, and that's a guy that you want to back. And, you know, again, take him now at 2-1 because I don't know if the price will get any better, especially if he gets off to a good start and goes 3-0 in the month of April. Yeah, guess what? It's going to be really hard for you to find a better price than what you get right now.
Who would you take, though, Mark? Like, if you say, remove Paul Skeens from the equation, like, who'd be your front runner? Like, Alcantara, I think, is very interesting at Miami, coming off an injury at 20-1, a true pitcher's ballpark. Those numbers still should probably look good, even though the team is bad. Is there somebody you would take a flyer on, though, in that?
I mean, Spencer Strider would be the next closest thing when he comes back to being able to pitch. I guess it's a question of when he actually does it, but his stuff is every bit as electric as Paul Skeens. He's got the high strikeout rate. He's got everything that, you know, voters get all jazzed up about when it comes to voting for the Cy Young Award. He's got swing and miss stuff. He's been close to being in that conversation as a, I mean, I think he was the prohibitive favorite heading into last year before his injury, or he was one of the top two or three favorites to win the Cy Young. So he's the guy that I would look to coming back from the injury.
By the way, quick on the rookies here. I don't pay any attention to many of them. Sasaki obviously signed with the Dodgers, already pitched there. He's certainly a household name probably at this point. But the they almost look like names where like you would make up like as, hey, I just need to fill out a baseball team on N64 back in the day. It's put Brady House in there and Craig Yoho and Brandon Spohrat. Any looks there in the rookie market, or is it just up in the air for me as it is for you?
Yeah, again, I don't dive much into the rookie market, and it's pretty volatile. That's the thing, right? Like, there could be somebody who's not even out there yet that's not even got odds.
Correct.
That, you know, works their way into this thing. I usually wait till the end of April to start taking note of which rookies are coming out hot, and, you know, even at that, by the end of April, you should still get a 5-to-1, 6-to-1 kind of price on one of those guys that it's worth taking a flyer on right now. So as opposed to what you're looking at from the number one or the favorite in that spot, it's only 3-to-1. So I think you just kind of wait out the rookie of the year kind of deal and see what happens.
We're going to take some more shots at Aaron Boone right now, because as we talked about yesterday, the New York Yankees, the favorites to win in the American League based on the odds at the FanDuel Sportsbook. But Boone was like at the bottom of the list for managers. Say, oh, that's what they always do to the really good teams. No, they don't. Look at the National League. Third in line, Dave Roberts to be National League Manager of the Year, or maybe the best built team in the history of baseball. So we're not taking bonus points away from that. Tito Francona at a plus 320 price in the lead there. Any thoughts on the National League Manager of the Year here?
If Francona gets up to the playoffs, he's going to be in contention. Same thing with the Pirates. They get to the playoffs, they'll be in contention. One of these teams that hasn't had a playoff run in quite some time will obviously get some notoriety. Again, somehow if somebody in the West upsets the Dodgers and wins that division, yes, they'll get notoriety. Could the Mets, if they win the division, could they be in the conversation for manager of the year? Yes, I think all those things are possible. It's just a really hard mark to figure out at this point in time.
Let's take a look quickly at the comeback player of the year, because it's two Braves. It's Ronald Acuna, plus 250 price in the NL, and it's Spencer Strider, plus 350, tied with Sandy Alcantara of the Miami Marlins. Like, if Acuna comes back, and it's hard for a pitcher for me, because I think they sort of slow play them when they had that devastating injury for the season. So I don't know if you can get those big strikeout numbers by pitching into the eighth and the ninth inning at that point, at least early on. Ronald Acuna, plus 250, seems like such a good bet to me. It really does.
It does, and I agree, but I would argue this with Strider. Remember, his first full year as a starter, he had 300 strikeouts on 180 innings. He doesn't need 250 innings to get to that number. So his swing and miss stuff is still legit enough for him to garner attention.
Let's go down here, this list. Little Dustin May, Chris Bryant, Christian Yelich. Wow, Yelich at 22-to-1. Whoa, we got numbers, people. And you know what else we got? Hour number three up next.